Welcome to Beta Finch, your AI-powered earnings breakdown. Today, we're digging into Duke Energy's second quarter 2026 results. Duke's the largest regulated utility fleet in the country, so this one's worth paying attention to. Before we dive in, a quick note: this podcast is AI-generated content for educational and entertainment purposes only. Nothing we discuss should be considered investment advice. Always do your own research and consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
All right, let's get into the numbers. Duke posted adjusted EPS of $1.43 for second quarter, up nicely from $1.25 a year ago. Reported EPS came in at $1.38.
The growth story here is pretty straightforward. Electric utilities and infrastructure added $0.15 year-over-year, driven by customer growth and all the infrastructure investment they're pouring into their service territories. Gas utilities were roughly flat, which management chalked up to it just being a seasonally quiet quarter.
Worth flagging, favorable weather helped too. Cold first quarter, hot second quarter, and Duke's generating fleet cashed in on that demand. CFO Brian Savoy actually said they might reinvest some of that weather upside back into their generating facilities in the back half of the year. That's a smart move, banking some of the windfall into asset reliability rather than just letting it flow straight to the bottom line.
Big picture, they reaffirmed full-year guidance of $6.55-$6.80 in adjusted EPS, and they're sticking with their long-term target of 5%-7% EPS growth through 2030. But here's the headline: management said they're increasingly confident they'll land in the top half of that range starting in 2028.
That 2028 timing matters. That's when the big economic development projects, mainly data centers, start ramping up under their electric service agreements, or ESAs. Duke's now signed 7.8 GW of these agreements, and they're targeting the full 15.4 GW pipeline to convert by the first half of 2027.
Let's talk about the capital side, because it's massive. Duke's running what they call the industry's largest regulated capital plan, over $1 billion a month going into the ground. And on top of the existing five-year plan, they flagged another $5 billion-$10 billion of potential upside, mostly tied to new generation and transmission needs in Indiana and Florida as more of these large load contracts get signed.
That's a real growth lever, but I want to highlight something else: the regulatory side. Duke reached a settlement in North Carolina on their DEC rate case. 9.8% ROE, 53% equity layer, and they kept an earnings sharing mechanism that lets them earn up to 10.3% ROE if they outperform. They're now trying to reach a similar settlement for the DEP case, with a hearing scheduled and orders expected by mid-November on both.
Constructive regulatory outcomes are the backbone of the utility thesis, and Duke's track record here is strong. They also rolled out something called the Customer Protection Plus Commitment, basically formalizing that large data center customers pay their own way and don't stick existing ratepayers with a bill. That's a direct response to the affordability concerns we're hearing across the sector.
Speaking of affordability, that came up a lot in the Q&A, especially around Indiana. There's been real political pressure there given rising costs generally, and analysts push CEO Harry Sideris on whether Duke might use a GENCO-type structure to help finance large load generation separately. His answer was essentially, "We've looked at it before, didn't need it then, but we're open to revisiting it as these big contracts get signed."
The nuclear conversation was interesting too. Duke's doing about 300 MW of uprates on existing plants and pursuing license extensions out to 80 years, two already approved by the NRC, a third filing expected by year-end for Brunswick. But on new nuclear, Sideris was clear: no decision yet, and they won't move until financial risk protections are in place for both customers and investors. They're keeping options open between large-scale AP1000 reactors and small modular reactors.
That caution is notable given how much hype there's been around new nuclear for data center demand. Duke's basically saying, "We're not rushing into a multi-billion-dollar first-of-a-kind construction risk without the government or someone else helping absorb potential overruns."
On the balance sheet, they're tracking toward their FFO-to-debt target of 14.5% this year, moving to 15% longer term. They've also priced $600 million under their at-the-market equity program, being pretty opportunistic about locking in pricing now rather than doing one big dilutive equity raise later.
And don't forget the dividend. They just raised it in July, marking over 20 consecutive years of annual increases. Steady 2% bump in line with recent years.
So stepping back, what's the takeaway for investors here? Duke is executing on a genuinely enormous build-out, and the data center demand story is real and growing, not slowing down. The question analysts kept circling back to is whether that 5-7% growth range itself could move higher, and management's answer was patience. They typically revisit that guidance in the fourth quarter, not mid-cycle.
Right, and one detail that stood out to me was Brian Savoy's comments on the cash flow shape going forward. Right now, they're benefiting from accelerated tax credits, particularly on nuclear production tax credits. But he said that benefit reaches parity around 2028 to 2029, and then it flips. The earnings power from all these completed investments starts showing up directly in cash flow through the early 2030s. So there's a real transition point coming where the story shifts from tax credit optimization to harvesting returns on the build-out.
That's a good framework for thinking about the multi-year arc here, not just this quarter's numbers.
Before we wrap up, everything discussed is AI-generated analysis for educational purposes. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Please do your own due diligence.
Bottom line, Duke had a solid first half. Guidance is intact, and the big story to watch going forward is how quickly that 15.4 gigawatt pipeline converts to signed contracts, and whether that pushes the growth algorithm higher when they update guidance later this year.
We'll be watching the third quarter update closely, especially any commentary on the Indiana rate case and further progress on those large load agreements.
That's it for this episode of Beta Finch. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.